Hello and welcome back to the Tricky Notes podcast. This is your host, Trick. And this week, I bring you another Diva directory. And in case you missed my previous Diva directory, what a Diva directory is I give you pretty much a table of contents on an artist's musical career. Stress on the musical career, especially with this artist. And the last one I went on, Dolly Parton, it went really, really well. But of course, it went over 2 hours. Now, that's partially because her career is 55 years long. This artist's career is not 55 years long. It's 40 years long. Where Dolly, her career could be put into nice little bucket eras, that encompassed, like multiple albums. This artist really didn't have that going. In fact, every album is its own era. So it makes it a little bit different to talk about, but it definitely gives a lot more variety to the career, for sure. But of course, this is Madonna that I'm talking about. And I know when I say Madonna, there's a lot of preconceived notions that come into that nowadays. Because her career has not been just music. It's been movies. She's actually written children's books. She's also had these hugely elaborate concert experiences. She also courts controversy. And a lot of those other things can cause her music to kind of be forgotten. Now, there's still songs of hers that are just undeniable, that everybody knows, but there's so much more to her career, and there are a lot of number one singles that you may have forgotten, or even top 10 singles that I would say, oh yeah, I'll mention a song and they say, oh, I've never heard that, and it's like, well, it was a big hit. but it's just because of all the other stuff, it's just kind of been forgotten. So on this episode, we are just going to be talking about the music. And what I mean by that is we literally will be discussing just the music and nothing about controversies or relationships or movies, unless they directly pertain to music we're talking about. Like, for example, I'll talk about, her mother passing away when she was 5, because that is a consistent theme that keeps coming up in her music. One of her marriages, both of her marriages, inspired some of the music, both positive and negatively. So mentioning those will think, but, we won't be really digging into a lot of those controversies. Also, we will not be talking about her concert tours, except for a brief discussion of the concert tour albums that have come out, on those. But we're just going to be focused on the music. So let's go ahead and get started. Now, before we get started talking about Madonna's music, I think it's important to kind of highlight a few things that tend to be overlooked about Madonna. First off is, besides being a singer and a lyricist, she is also a musician. As a child, she took classical piano. And on some of her early demos, she played synth. So that is, an instrument that she can play. Also, in some of her early bands, which I will talk about in a moment. She, you know, both played drums and guitar. And in some of her early demos, you hear her play guitar as well. And, you know, she's kind of gotten back to playing guitar in concerts and that kind of thing now. So, you know, she does have a musicianship. She's not just a singer. So wanted to kind of point that out. Also, Madonna is also a producer herself. Now, I'll kind of get more into this as we talk about her career trajectory, but she has been executive producer on all of her albums, except for the first two. And people who work with her, she doesn't have that just as a title. She's actually in there. She's actually working to make adjustments and do the things that they need to, you know, need to do to make it sound better. And, you know, people she's worked with are really speak very highly of her work ethic and her, kind of, how do I put this? Her kind of, musical instincts, when it comes to some things. I don't think the instincts have always hit exactly right, but I think overall they've been very good. So I kind of wanted to kind of point those out. And, you know, when I talk about people she's worked with, I speak very highly about her, you know, thing. I'm talking about people, you know, like William Orbit and Nile Rodgers and, Diplo, Timbaland, Justin Timberlake, Pharrell Williams. You know, these are pretty big names in their own right that have all spoken very highly of her work ethic, her musicality. And like I said, so I really think it's important to kind of remember that. And that's one of the reasons, that I wanted to focus so much on just the music and not all the other extraneous stuff to kind of point out why she has had the staying power she has. It's not just the reinvention, though that's part of it. You know, there's good music behind what she does. And that, you know, no matter what else you say about Madonna, if the music's not there, she wouldn't still be here. So I think we should start talking about Madonna's career before her major label debut. And that goes back to the late 70s, 1979 in New York. First, I need to kind of mention she did have a stint as a background singer and background dancer for disco artist Patrick Hernandez. And toured with him for several months. Just mentioning that just because it, gives a little bit of color to, what's to her career. But after she finished that stint, her and her then boyfriend, Dan Gilroy, formed a band called The Breakfast Club. Now, The Breakfast Club, Madonna played drums and guitar and sang for the band. Now, this is not the same Breakfast Club that would have a hit in the late 80s, though there are some members that were part of both. But we won't really kind of get into that, but basically it is a mostly a different entity. But after a little bit with the Breakfast Club, Madonna and her ex-boyfriend from Michigan got together and formed a new band, Emmy and the Emmys, where, once again, Madonna played guitar and sang. And the drummer was Stephen Bray. after disbanding that band, Madonna started pursuing a solo career. And like I said, the early Breakfast Club, early Emmy the Emmys, there were no official releases for, but you can find some bootlegs on there. I really don't think they're essential looking out. They're more novelty nowadays. But there is a release that is worth checking out from that era. Because Stephen Bray worked with Madonna on her demos that she began shopping around to different clubs. And Stephen Bray actually released them as an album called Pre-Madonna back in 1997. And it was Pre-Madonna in North America. In the rest of the world, it's called In the Beginning. Now, that particular release included, one, two, three, four, six Madonna demos of songs she wrote, and then also another one demo that Madonna recorded of a song Stephen Bray wrote. And then the release also included some remixes on those, but basically I bring this up because this is actually has the original demos of what were to be her first two singles, both Everybody and Burning Up, which it's really interesting to see how the songs kind of evolved, from their original forms. I do also think it's interesting to hear some of her early demos and early songwritings, especially on a song like Laugh to Keep from Crying, which she really is singing more of like in a Joan Jett, Chrissy Hynde, kind of voice. And, just kind of shows you where it was. And, it shows that Madonna was playing guitar on those and also playing synth on those. So it is a nice time capsule, but it is inessential. And I mentioned it because it wasn't a release. Madonna did not authorize the release, but she did get royalties from the release. I don't know how she feels about it being released now, but just wanted to bring that up. Now, there is another thing from this period that I do need to mention. Especially if you're going to be looking at different Madonna stuff, because pre-Madonna is worth checking out. There's another Madonna release called In the Beginning that you need to avoid at all cost. So basically Madonna, being a broke musician, did some session work. And one of the session work she did some background vocals for a German artist named Otto von Werner. Now, Otto von Werner has milked the heck out of those background vocals. He has re-released them, remixed them so many times since the late 80s. There's probably 30 to 40 different releases of these same background vocal lines just over different beats over and over. Songs like Wild Dancing, Cosmic Climb, those are not Madonna songs. They are, avoid those at all costs. But Pre-Madonna is worth checking out. In the Beginning in other countries, In the Beginning, early Madonna, no, do not avoid that at all costs. So I just kind of wanted to talk about her early career. Now let's get into her major label debut and move on from there. So after Madonna recorded her demos with Stephen Bray, Madonna really worked the club scene and really tried to get DJs to play her music. And she got the attention of a DJ named Mark Camus at the Danceteria. Now, Mark Haymans took an interest in her music and Madonna because they dated. But they, and he ended up getting her a meeting with the president of Sire Records. The meeting went well. Sire saw the potential and signed Madonna to a 3-single deal. And if the singles went well, she would then get to record a full album. Now, so her first single came out in October 1982 and reached number 3 on the club charts. And that was Everybody. And Everybody was one of the demos that she was circulating. But the record label put her into back into the studio with better recording equipment and to record a new demo. Now, this first one was, was actually produced by Mark Kamens, the DJ. Did really well, hit number 3 on the dance charts, which, you know, for a debut artist, that's really great. So at that point, the record label said, okay, we're going to just go ahead and move forward the album. And they hired a producer, Reggie Lucas, to work with Madonna. Now, Reggie Lucas had toured with Roberta Flack and Miles Davis as a musician before, becoming a producer and songwriter. He had credits with, Stephanie Mills, and some other R&B artists. Warner Brothers, that's just who they picked. And, brought him in. He produced the second single, Burning Up. But Madonna didn't like what he did to her song as far as production, and he wouldn't listen to her. So Madonna pulled in her then boyfriend Jellybean Benitez and had him remix it. And that remix version went to number 3 on the club charts. And since Jellybean was there, Madonna actually had him do a lot of touch-ups on the album, but he didn't get credited for much of that. But Madonna's kind of fighting in a way with Reggie Lucas. He ended up leaving the project part of the way through unfinished, and Madonna and Jellybean had to finish it up. At that point, Madonna had, had her 5 songs she'd written. She had the 2 that, Reggie Lucas has written. She had one that was written by Stephen Bray that was on her original demo. Unfortunately, at that time, Stephen Bray had actually sold the song to another artist, so Madonna could no longer use it. So Jellybean found another song for Madonna and ended up producing that for her and putting it on the album. Now, that last song that was added ended up being Holiday, which was the single that really broke Madonna through to the pop charts. Now, like I said, both Everybody and Burning Up were hits, but only on the dance charts. They never actually hit the Billboard Top 100. So Holiday ended up being the first song that did. And it, went up the charts and, did fairly well. And then, Madonna followed it up with 2 other huge singles. Borderline, which was one of the 2 written by Reggie Lucas, and Lucky Star, which is one of the ones that Madonna wrote. And Both of those reached the top 10 in the US, and really kind of cemented Madonna as an up and coming artist. So, you know, so this first album, I was kind of talking about, this album has a lot of really good song. It's a really good debut album, but and there are essential songs on here. Lucky Star, Holiday, Borderline, those are essential songs. I will add as an essential the Burning Up, but only the 12-inch version, because I think that is the more fun version to me and everything. And I would also add that I have a personal favorite on this album. It's a song called Think of Me. I don't think of it as essential, but I do have it as a personal fave. So that's the first album. Kind of Madonna, you know, finding her feet and kind of moving along. So after the success of the first album, Madonna, you know, needed a new producer. And Madonna actually wanted to produce the album herself, but Warner Brothers wouldn't let her. They saw her as too green and that she didn't know what she was doing. So they compromised, and, you know, they kind of pulled in one of the best music producers of all time and one of my musical heroes. So fresh off the success of his work with David Bowie, they pulled in Nile Rodgers. Now, Nile Rodgers gained fame as the leader of Chic in the disco era. He also was a prolific songwriter and producer in the disco era. And then moving out of the disco era, he really moved into production. Like I said, even, you know, working with Diana Ross on her Diana album, you know, with I'm Coming Out, and you know, and then, you know, worked David Bowie on Let's Dance. So Madonna was like super excited to work with Nile Rodgers. I mean, you know, it's Nile Rodgers. So what's interesting is Nile Rodgers also brought in a couple of his Chic bandmates to work on the album. So he also brought in Bernard Edwards and Tony Thompson. So Rodgers played guitar, Tony Thompson played drums, and Bernard Edwards played bass. So, you know, second album has great musical pedigree before it had even started recording. So no matter how good a pedigree of an album is, it's nothing unless you have good songs to back it up. You can have the most talented musician in the world, but you have to have good songs for them to work with. And, you know, for this album, you know, Madonna, she wrote 5 of the 9 songs. And then one of the songs was a cover of a Rolls Royce song. And I believe Nile Rodgers is the one that kind of convinced her to do that one. And then there were 3 additional songs that Madonna chose. Now, Nile Rodgers talks about this interesting way, and really talks about kind of her musical instincts with this, because, you know, she picked Material Girl. That was her thing that kind of talked about where she was in the time. And then, you know, the second song that had been introduced to her from Warner Brothers was the song Like a Virgin. And it was written by Billy Steinberg and Tom Kelly. Now Rodgers heard the song. It's like, I don't think this is really suited for Madonna or this project. But Madonna said, no, I think this is a good song. I think we should do it. And then 4 days later, after not being able to get the chorus out of his head, now Rogers apologized to Madonna, saying, "You were right. There's something here. Let's do it." So they ended up, you know, kind of, now Roger really kind of recognized Madonna's, you know, ear for pop at that time. And then once again, with the last track added to the album, came really late. And, you know, now Roger had asked some songwriter friends of them to submit some songs for the album. And one of the ones that got really late was "Dress You Up." And now Rogers was like, "No, we don't, you know, we're too far along. We don't need to add that." So Madonna said, no. This is going to be a hit. We need to add it. And she won over and she got it. And it became one of the top 10 hits of the album. So, you know, the three songs that she selected that were not written by her all became hits. So, you know, really kind of showed, you know, at that time how, you know, she had a good ear for pop even then, even though she wasn't producing at that point. You know, she could really kind of pick the stuff out. Now, like I said, she wrote the other songs. "Angel" was the other hit from the album. Most people have forgotten that. That's a personal favorite of mine. But it was, you know, written by her, and then, you know, has a lot of really other good songs on there as well. But I mentioned that Rose Royce cover. Now, at this point in Madonna's career, she hasn't done a ballad. You know, her first album was all dance oriented. And so now Rogers wanted to show off the fact that Madonna has a voice. I mean, she's not a Whitney Houston. She's not a Mariah Carey, but she is a solid singer. And he wanted to show that off. So he actually, you know, worked with her and to sing "Love Don't Live Here Anymore." And she actually recorded "Love Don't Live Here Anymore" with a full orchestra, which is first time she'd ever done anything like that. So, you know, there's talks of the session where she was very intimidated by the whole thing, but she really got emotional towards the end of the song. And she actually started crying while she was singing, and they kind of left that take in. But it's, the album is a good solid album, and it really kind of solidified the next phase in Madonna's career and really kind of proved that she was not a one hit wonder. You know, even though she had more hits, you know, multiple hits from the first album, I meant that she wasn't a one hit album wonder. She was a pop artist. Now, essential songs from this album to me are "Like a Virgin" and "Love Don't Live Here Anymore." "Material Girl," you know, while widely known, I don't think it's aged as well as some of the others. So that's why I didn't include it. You know, "Dress You Up," same kind of thing. Really, really great pop song, but I don't see it as essential as the other two. We'll say there are personal faves of mine, which are "Angel" and "Over and Over." "Over and Over," she talks about, you know, always getting up when you fall down, and just really kind of speaking to her tenacity. And then "Angel," I just love the song. it's just one of those great songs. So speaking of "Angel," let's talk about what happened after "Like a Virgin." So before Madonna would do her next album, she appeared on two different soundtracks. And the first one's related to "Angel," so I'll start with that, or that one. Madonna starred in a movie called "Desperately Seeking Susan." And for that movie, she wrote a song called "Into the Groove." if you know the song, you know, that's one of her signature songs now. But at the time, it wasn't available commercially in the U.S. at all, except as the B-side to the Angel 12-inch. And if you're not familiar with what a 12-inch is, it's the version of the single that is the size of a regular LP. It's 12 inches across. Most singles at the time, also known as 45s, were 7-inch. So you have a 7-inch, you have a 12-inch single. It was not on the 7-inch single, it was only on the 12-inch single. So, therefore, it was kind of harder to come by, but it was a huge radio hit. It was a big hit. And Into the Groove, obviously, is one of those essential Madonna songs. Now, the other soundtrack that Madonna appeared on and appeared in the movie was a movie called Vision Quest. In the movie, she appears as a lounge singer, and she performs two songs in the soundtrack. One of them is a song that she wrote called Gambler, which I have a soft spot for and I really enjoy, but it's not really essential. And then you have the song Crazy for You. Now, Crazy for You is really the first ballad that Madonna released as a single. And it's one of those that you know it if you've heard it, but you probably didn't realize it was Madonna because it's one of those kind of forgotten Madonna hits. But it is a, you know, great song. It's kind of one of those kind of 80s love songs that of the era. It's a good, you know, really good ballad. Crazy for You and Gambler were produced by Jelly Bean and Madonna, and then Into the Groove was produced by Madonna and Stephen Bray. So Madonna did start being able to produce her own music at that point. I think Warner Brothers finally, after two successful albums, gave her enough leeway to finally start doing it herself. But of course, they wouldn't let her do it alone, but at least they would let her be part of the production of the music. So basically, of those two soundtracks, both Into the Groove from Desperately Seeking Susan and Crazy for You from Vision Quest, those are essential songs on the list. Gambler's a personal fave. So before we start talking about the next album and the next thing, I do have to kind of bring up something in Madonna's personal life, just because it does kind of impact the next couple albums and how they are done. But so just kind of going back a little bit on the video shoot for Material Girl, Madonna met Sean Penn, and Sean Penn and Madonna began a tumultuous relationship. And you know, so by the time she started recording the next album, you know, they were very much an item, and Madonna was very much in love. And, you know, so that really had an influence on the album itself. Just bringing that up because of it is the album is actually dedicated to Sean Penn, the coolest guy in the universe. So, so there you go. So back to the music. So one of the things about Nile Rodgers producing Madonna's second album is he actually, because he wanted to work with Madonna, he actually reduced his normal fee that he would have charged the record label for that production work. He did it under the assumption that once Madonna got solidified, that he could, you know, get back to his normal rate. Well, I was kind of surprised when Madonna told him that he wasn't going to be producing her next album, which that took some guts because now Rodgers is, you know, like I said, one of the best producers in the industry. But at that time, Madonna, especially after having those hits from the soundtracks that she was able to produce, you know, she had the kind of backing with the label to actually do her own production work now. So she did. And I mean, she didn't do it alone. She pulled in both Stephen Bray and someone named Patrick Leonard. Now, Patrick Leonard, that one is kind of an interesting story. So let's kind of talk about him and how he kind of got involved. So Madonna was really wanting to become more of a songwriter. And, you know, she, you know, obviously was writing her own material in a lot of cases, even if a lot of her songs ended up not being the singles, she was writing and she wanted to do more writing for other artists. And there are some songs that she wrote for other artists that ended up being recorded. We're not going to kind of get into that in this episode because that could definitely go a different way. But basically, she met up with Patrick Leonard, in one of the songwriting sessions, and he had a musical theme that he had written for a movie that they ended up not using. And Madonna really liked it, and she wrote lyrics to it and said that let's use it for Sean's movie. And he had a movie called At Close Range that they were doing. And, you know, Madonna took the demo with Patrick Leonard to the movie producer and the music director for that movie, and they ended up hiring Patrick Leonard to work the movie and to score it. So, really kind of a great thing. But also, in that time, Patrick Leonard was also writing some other things for other people. He had submitted a song to Michael Jackson that he ended up not using. So just kind of giving you some history on Patrick Leonard there. Now, about True Blue to me is where Madonna really flexed in her career. This is the first time where she had artistic control from top to bottom. And as such, you know, she was able to pick her own producers. She was able to pick her own songs. She was able to make decisions on how those songs came across. And really drive the direction of the album, which, you know, especially for a female pop singer at the time, you know, that was kind of a big deal. So on this album, Madonna actually has a writing or a co-writing credit on every song. This is the first of her albums where that was the case, because the other albums, you know, included songs by other artists or written by other people. And now, with that being said, there are several three songs on the album that were not originally written from the start by Madonna. And I just kind of wanted to point those out. First, Patrick Leonard had written a song that he submitted to Michael Jackson for his Bad album, and he rejected it. Madonna took that song and rewrote the lyrics, and it became La Isla Bonita, which is one of her signature songs today. Another song on the album was originally written for Cyndi Lauper. And it was originally called Follow Your Heart, but Madonna got the song, liked the basis of it, but she ended up rewriting the lyrics to be Open Your Heart. and really kind of working around that metaphor in the song. So, you know, and the songwriters were really, you know, really happy that that ended up on the album. Now, the third one, though, stirred up a little bit of controversy because basically Madonna just added some lyrics to it. She didn't really do any rework. And that was on Papa Don't Preach. Now, I'm not going to kind of take sides or anything like that. Sometimes the songwriter has kind of pushed back on that. And this will not be the last time that this type of thing happened with Madonna. Though the other, there were, that I'll talk about later, had a lot of other issues with it. But basically, with those three being aside, all the rest of them were written by Madonna. And that's impressive for this time, especially on a, you know, a pop artist. You know, there weren't many of her peers at that time that were doing that. You know, Cyndi Lauper wrote some of her stuff, but a lot of her stuff was written by other, you know, other people. Tina Turner, you know, most of her stuff was written by other people. You know, that's just the way it was at that time. And so having a, you know, writing your own material, I mean, this, especially on this album, really influenced some other upcoming pop artists to really kind of take control of their career. And, you know, you don't have to be a singer-songwriter in the mold of Carole King or Joni Mitchell. You can be a pop star and still write your own stuff. So really kind of an influence. Now, on this album in particular, a lot of people kind of look at it as probably her most successful commercially. And I can see that argument because it did have 3 number one singles on it and, you know, 5 top tens altogether. You know, so really, really good, solid album. Now, on the flip side, though, this album has a few, you know, kind of what I feel is filler tracks, to be honest. It's a good album. I do enjoy listening to it front to back. But there are, you know, a few songs in here that just don't really, to me, they're not ones I seek out, in other words. White Heat, Jimmy Jimmy, Love Makes the World Go Round. Those are kind of, they're okay. That kind of thing. Real quick note on this album, kind of an aside on Madonna. But this album did feature background vocals from 2 other big songwriters that would be prominent in future years. And that's Syeda Garrett, who wrote Man in the Mirror for Michael Jackson's Bad album and sang duet with him on I Just Can't Stop Loving You. And also Richard Marx sang background for Madonna on this album. And if you don't know who Richard Marx is, look him up. he is definitely a good songwriter out there. So this album has, you know, quite a few essentials as far as Madonna goes. Open Your Heart, Live to Tell, La Isla Bonita. Those are definitely essentials. Personal favorite of mine is True Blue. Madonna's kind of moved away from True Blue in recent years. She doesn't really revisit that often. But of course she wrote it for Sean Penn and, you know, things happened there. But True Blue is just one of those silly pop songs that I just really enjoy. And yeah, so that's True Blue. So the next Madonna releases are once again, soundtrack songs. And these are from her movie, Who's That Girl?, which I have a soft spot for. It's not a good movie, but I enjoy it for the campness it is. But we won't get into that. But she wrote four songs for the soundtrack. Two of them with Patrick Leonard and two with Stephen Bray. You know, obviously the title track, Who's That Girl? You also have Causing a Commotion, which was a big hit. And then you also have The Look of Love, which is a ballad that I really, really enjoy. And kind of a forgettable song called Can't Stop. To me, Causing a Commotion is definitely an essential. Look of Love is a personal favorite. I'm not going to get into anything else with that album because the rest of it is Warner Brother artists. They kind of just shoved onto the album, and a couple of friends of Madonna that she wanted to promote that she convinced the record label to put on as well. Honestly, most of the album, the rest of the album is kind of forgettable. And it's not Madonna anyway, so we won't really get into it anymore after that. But yeah, Causing a Commotion is definitely essential. Who's That Girl is really good, but personal favorite is definitely Look of Love. So in late 1987, after, you know, Who's That Girl, Madonna released her first compilation album. And it's an album called You Can Dance. And it's not like a greatest hits album. It's actually a remix album. And I can't say that Madonna was the first to really to do a remix album. But I know that she was among the first. So I know there was quite a few artists around that time that also released remix albums. You know, on this album, she brought in, you know, she brought back in Jelly Bean and also used, you know, Patrick Leonard that she had worked with on True Blue to kind of put this, you know, album together. Now, this particular remix album, it actually plays like a DJ set, which means that there aren't gaps between songs. The songs flow into each other. Now, if you listen to it on CD, you do have a cut, but that's where the album, the LP, or the cassette would have had a break. So that is kind of how that is, that kind of works. Now, I wouldn't say this album really has any essential songs on it, but I will say the remix for Over and Over is really, really great. I really, really love that remix. The rest of them, they're okay. They're good remixes. Most of them are kind of dated now. I mean, they're, you know, late 80s remixes. So, but it's really to me, it's a really fun album and really enjoyable. So, what's interesting about this though is a lot of times it's one of those weird cases where in the secondary market, the cassette is actually more in demand than the LP or the CD. Let me explain why, just real quick. So the CD included three additional dub versions. You know, so took the seven original songs and added three to bring it up to 10 songs. Well, the cassette included four dub versions instead of just three. So the cassette actually includes a dub version of Spotlight, where the CD only has dub versions of Holiday, Over and Over and Into the Groove. So for that reason, the cassette is actually a little bit more sought after than either the record or the CD. That's kind of a weird aside, but just thought it was interesting, so I'd share that. So at this point in Madonna's career, she has had three successful albums. She has had multiple successful soundtrack appearances. And she even has had a successful compilation album. remix album. So Madonna goes into the studio to record her next album, and she takes all the things that she's learned so far and, to me, creates her magnum opus. To me, Like a Prayer is her best album. It's my favorite of her albums. It to me still holds up. I really don't feel any of the songs are really dated. They kind of, to me, hold up very well. And I'm not the only person that feels that way about this album. This album is constantly mentioned by different artists throughout the years as being one of their, musical influences. Every edition of the Rolling Stones' greatest 500 greatest albums of all time have included this album. It is definitely one that got it right in a lot of ways. So, of course, I'm talking about Like a Prayer. Like a Prayer is just a great album, start to finish. Now, once again, Madonna, shares production credit on every song. She co-wrote every song on the album. And it really, she was really pushing herself lyrically, and also really tapping into some darkness in her life. What I mean by that is, by this point, she had had a very messy divorce with Sean Penn. And by messy, I mean violent. Madonna talks about them both being very passionate. And unfortunately, it was violent at times. And that is reflected in some of the songs on this album, which is why I bring it up. But she also tapped back in to a lot of her childhood hurts as well. One of the songs is inspired by, the death of her mother when she was 5. Another song is kind of talks about her difficult relationship with her father, after her mother's death. But then also has a song that talks about the importance of family right after that. So it's really an emotional album and a good album not all emotional albums are good albums, but when an artist really taps into the things that drive their creativity like this, you really get magic. And this album has a lot of magic on it. So we'll talk about a few things that are, to me, are important in this album. Most of the album is produced by Madonna and Patrick Leonard again. Madonna really has a good thing going on with Patrick Leonard at this point. But there are two songs that she did with that were she co-wrote and produced with Stephen Bray again. But in addition to that, she also went into some writing sessions with Prince. And while they wrote several songs together, only one really Madonna really liked of them working together, and that ended up on the album. So. And that album, that one is produced by Prince. And that is Love Song. But of course, Prince didn't just co-write and pr- produced that one song on the album. He actually also played guitar, uncredited, on several other songs on the album, including Like a Prayer and Keep It Together. So that's really kind of a cool thing if you are a Prince fan, which I also am a Prince fan in addition to Madonna. Because, you know, when you first hear the beginning of Like a Prayer and that guitar riff, that's Prince. that's pretty cool. But this album, oh my goodness, this album has so many great songs. I mean, it has, of course, Like a Prayer. It has Express Yourself, which is it's become a signature Madonna song. It has Cherish, which is one of my all-time favorite happy songs of Madonna. It has Keep It Together, which is a personal favorite of mine. You know, I mentioned Oh Father, Dear Jesse is a great song. They were all released as singles. Dear Jesse was not released in the U.S. Keep It Together was. Dear Jesse was released everywhere else, just not, you know, in the world. But, you know, just a really, really good album. The only kind of weakness to the album is kind of the joke at the end. But to me, it's still fun. It's still good. but I just really, I really can't express how much I love this album. It really is, just absolutely just a tour de force. It really is. I can't sing its praises high enough. Essential songs of this album are definitely Like a Prayer, Express Yourself, Cherish, and Oh Father, and then personal favorites to me are Keep It Together and Dear Jesse. Just fantastic album. And do want to throw out one other thing on this, because it's also another personal favorite of mine. On the Cherish single, there's a B-side. And if you're not familiar with B-side means, it means, you know, it's the, when you have an A-side and a B-side of a single on, you know, when you have it as a little record. Also as a little cassette single, because I had this little cassette single back in the day. You have your main song on one side, which is the A-side, and on the B-side, they usually throw another song on there. A lot of times it's going to be another song from the album or a remix or another version. But sometimes, like in this case, it is a new song. And in this case, it's a new song called Supernatural. I love Supernatural. It is a silly song of having a love affair with a ghost. It's so silly and stupid, but I so love the song. Like I said, I had the cassette single, you know, back then. You know, that would have been fall of 89. I got this cassette single for that. And I just loved that song, Supernatural. And, you know, it's just really good. Now, and Madonna did later contribute a remix version of that to the album, Red Hot and Dance, which was in, AIDS fundraising album, which George Michael also wrote some songs for, but that's neither here nor there. We're not going to go into that very deep, but anyway, that will close out 1989 and the Like a Prayer time. So towards the tail end of the Like a Prayer era, Madonna co-wrote a song with a DJ named Shep Pettibone. Now, this song that they wrote was initially going to be a B-side of Keep It Together when they released it in the U.S. But Warner Brothers, once they heard it, said, no, it is not going to be a B-side. We're going to release that as a single by itself. And that song was Vogue. probably her most recognizable hit today. You know, now, yes, there's some controversy about, you know, her co-opting ballroom culture and all that. I'm not going to get into that. I am just going to talk about the song. And the song is just pure magic to me. I just absolutely love this song. Now, the song became a huge hit, and Warner Brothers decided that they were going to put that onto Madonna's next album, which Madonna's next album would end up being a kind of soundtrack album, but more than a soundtrack album. And I'm talking about I'm Breathless, music from and inspired by Dick Tracy. That's the full name of the album. So that's it. But basically, Madonna was cast in a new movie role, and she was playing Breathless Mahoney in Dick Tracy, which was starred and directed by Warren Beatty. And this Madonna album features three songs from the movie, and then a bunch of songs inspired by the era or themes of the movie. Now, many of the songs are written by Madonna. The three from the movie were written by Stephen Sondheim of Broadway musical fame. And then there's also two additional songs and a remix of one of those that were kind of written for the project by someone else. But the album ended up being produced by Madonna and Patrick Leonard for most of the songs that she wrote for the project, except for Vogue, which was Madonna and Shep Pettibone. And then the ones for the movie were produced by Madonna and the music director for the movie, Bill Bottrell. Kind of talking a lot around that, but let's just kind of get back to the basics. So basically, Vogue was a huge hit. It just was. And Warner Brothers tied that into this album. It kind of fit the theme, even though Madonna talked about 40s music movie stars and 40s and 50s movie stars and not the 30s of the film. But you know, they made it work. This album is really kind of a concept album. It's kind of all over the place. It's enjoyable for me, but there are a couple songs on here I would kind of skip. The second song released from the soundtrack is a joke song called Hanky Panky, which is fun. It's funny. It was a top 10 hit. A song about spanking. Madonna took to the top 10 of the charts. That just shows you her star power at that point, that she could do that. But you know, the album has some highlights, other than Vogue, obviously. To me, the three songs from the movie are good. What Can You Lose with Mandy Patinkin is a pretty song. More from the movie is probably her show-stopping moment in the movie. But Sooner or Later really showed that Madonna could really still sing. Now, I know Stephen Sondheim had worries about Madonna being able to sing what he wrote, but you know, to me, she did it. And Sooner or Later ended up winning an Academy Award. Of course, it went to Stephen Sondheim, not Madonna, because it goes to the songwriter. But she performed at the Academy Awards, and you know, you can find that. But to be perfectly honest, though, this is kind of an inessential piece of Madonna's discography. Really, a lot of the good songs end up appearing on other compilations from Madonna, other than the actual soundtrack songs. So there, so, you know, it is what it is. To me, the essentials obviously are Vogue. And sooner or later, personal favorite of mine is a song called Something to Remember, which I will revisit later on when we get to that particular compilation that it appears on. So towards the tail end of 1990, because I'm Breathless came out in the beginning part of 1990, Madonna releases her first greatest hits collection. And it is called the Immaculate Collection. Now, of course, if a lot of, as a kid, I didn't know why it was called the Immaculate Collection. As an adult, I realize it's a pun off Immaculate Conception, since she's Madonna, and Madonna had the Madonna, Mother of Jesus, had an Immaculate Conception. Madonna had an Immaculate Collection. I get it now. I didn't get it then, and I know that shows how young I was. You know, remember, this came out when I was 11. So, what's interesting about this is, you know, she remastered a lot of her earlier hits, including remastering them in Q-Sound. Now, Q-Sound is kind of forgotten now, but Q-Sound was essentially a surround sound, which is kind of a cool thing that she did. But Q-Sound really didn't stick around, but it was in kind of an interesting note. Another thing that happened is, two of the songs from Like a Prayer ended up getting remixes and don't appear in their original form. And sometimes radio stations, instead of playing the originals, would end up just playing the remix version of From the Greatest Hits because they were too lazy to go back and get the original. And that was for Like a Prayer and Express Yourself. But in addition to that, it was actually kind of the first place where some of her soundtrack hits were able to appear on a Madonna album. And that includes Crazy for You from the Vision Quest soundtrack, which you could at least get if you got the Vision Quest soundtrack, but also Into the Groove, the original version. Now, like I mentioned before, you could get the remix version on You Can Dance, but this is the first time you could actually get it on a Madonna album. So this album had 17 tracks on it. Now, two of them were new songs. So that was 15 hits by Madonna that were included on this album. Okay? 15 songs. It left off 7 of her top 10 hits. You know, so including one of her number one hits. So, you know, that's a lot of hits, you know, that you have to leave off 7 of your top 10 hits from this compilation because you don't have room. And you know, I mean, a couple of them, yeah, I kind of get, but you know, still leaving off 7 of your top 10 hits. That just shows you how powerful and how popular she was in the 80s and going into 1990 when this was released. Now, like I said, there were 2 new songs on this compilation on her greatest hits album. The first one was Justify My Love. Now, like I said, I'm talking music. I'm not going to talk about the video. So let's talk about music here. Now, this particular song was not an original Madonna composition. It was originally written by Lenny Kravitz and Ingrid Chavez. And it was actually written while Ingrid Chavez was filming Graffiti Bridge with Prince. And Lenny Kravitz and Ingrid Chavez co-wrote the song together. Now, when the when the album was released, when, you know, when the Immaculate Collection was released, the credits only list Lenny Kravitz and Madonna as songwriters. They do not release, it does not credit Ingrid Chavez at all. Well, Ingrid Chavez was kind of a Prince protege and poet, and was working with Prince on some lyric albums and stuff like that. But she ended up having to sue Lenny Kravitz to get songwriting credit. Madonna did not know that, according to all reports. Lenny Kravitz has said Madonna had no clue. Madonna ended up getting a songwriting credit because she changed some lyrics, kind of rewrote some lyrics and added some lyrics, much like she did with, Papa Don't Preach. But the bulk of it was written by Ingrid Chavez and Lenny Kravitz. But she ended up having, like I said, Ingrid Chavez had to sue to get credit. Now, the song itself has very little singing on it by Madonna. It's basically kind of a spoken word project. And, I mean, it's okay. And I know it was a huge hit. It's not one of my favorite Madonna songs, to be honest. I think it has its place in her discography, because, her trying something new. But, if you listen to the compilation from front to back, Just Found My Love's kind of nestled in between Vogue and the other new song, Rescue Me. And really, both Vogue and Rescue Me were co-written with Shep Pettibone, and they're very dance-driven songs. And here, Justify My Love is nestled in between the two, and to me, it just doesn't fit. It's good. It's just not one of my favorites. Rescue Me, however, is one of my favorites. I do like Rescue Me a lot. It is a personal favorite of mine. It was interesting is it while they released as a single, it wasn't supposed to be. What happened is record stations started playing it, and it really started going up the airplay charts, and so Warner Brothers said, well, I guess we better release it as a single now. And they ended up doing that and ended up going top 10. Which, once again, she added two more top 10 singles to her list with this release. So after the Immaculate Collection came out in the end of 1990, we didn't get any new music from Madonna until the summer of 1992. Now, throughout throughout that time, Madonna was actually on tour, on the Blonde Ambition tour, and then after the tour was over, she ended up being cast in a Penny Marshall movie called A League of Their Own, and Madonna was asked to record a song for the soundtrack. And she was already in working on the music for her next album. So she kind of threw together a song, wrote and threw together a song with Shep Pettibone and released it. In about 2 days, they gave it to Penny Marshall. She liked it. She put it in the movie. But then they ended up not putting it on the album, the soundtrack album, due to some contractual things, and instead the song ended up being put on the Summer Olympics album called Barcelona Gold. And of course it was also released as a single, so you could get it in the single version, which I had the cassette single of it. I loved cassette singles when I was younger, and I also eventually got Barcelona Gold, which, man, that's an interesting project. Anyway, but the song is to me a really great ballad. I personally think it's essential of hers. I love the song. It is I'm still kind of surprised it didn't get an Oscar nomination, at least. It did get a Golden Globe nomination, but, you know, people didn't really treat Madonna, you know, give Madonna her due and think of her as a serious artist at that point. So it is what it is. But I love This Used to Be My Playground. I think it's a really, really great, great song. And then Madonna released her next album. Now, to me, her next album is probably the most misunderstood project in her career. And I know that is largely because of outside things. But like I said, I am only going to talk music, so I'm not going to get into all that. But I do want to talk about Erotica. Now, Erotica, much like I'm Breathless, is really more of a concept album. It's you know, the beginning of the album, she's the first words in the album is, "My name is Dita. I'll be your mistress tonight." And it basically is Madonna exploring sex and relationships and all kinds of things from a different persona. I love the album. This likely will eventually be a thing, but this album, I got this album much later because my parents wouldn't let me have it when it came out, because, you know, I would have been 13, and yeah, no, why would you buy your 13-year-old son an album called Erotica? Yeah, no, that doesn't play. So I didn't get it until, you know, I went off to college, really. And this album really resonated with me on a personal level, because this album is an exploration of sex. It's an exploration of, you know, grief. It's an exploration of self-confidence. It's really an album that is a concept album, but still deeply personal, but also comedic. It's just a roller coaster of, you know, kind of up and down, and how, you know, how you look upon it. You know, this album has like some really huge highs and essential songs, and probably, to me, one of her most artistically like perfect songs, but it's kind of lost in the shuffle of all this other stuff and all the, let's just be frank, the puritanism of society. Now, Madonna recorded this album in the midst of filming a movie and doing photo shoots for a picture book she was working on, which, like I said, I'm not going to talk about, but if you're familiar, you know. But it's still one of those albums that has a much bigger influence than people give it credit for. It really put sex and sexuality in people's face, and some people were not comfortable with that, and it while critically it was, you know, well regarded, and in retrospect still is, at the time it really was seen kind of as a commercial failure, even though it did still sell pretty well. And, you know, in addition, it had, you know, some big hits, both, you know, had two top 10 hits, still had additional dance hits in addition that were, you know, may not have hit the Billboard Hot 100, but at least they were dance songs, and then had another top 20 hit, which I wish that song had done better, but you know, that was part of the backlash in a way. It really was a revolutionary album, you know, and, you know, yes, there are, like I said, some of the comedic stuff, is fun. like Where Life Begins, which is basically an ode to oral sex. you know, it's not, that something like that may not be as kind of artistic. It, like I said, it's like some of it's, you know, some of the stuff's Deep Deep Purple, some of it's comedic, kind of leans more on the comedic. But then, you know, you have great songs like Deeper and Deeper, which is just a great, you know, dance song. And then you have a ballad like Bad Girl, which to me is just kind of just like a heartbreaking song, but it's so, to me, it's beautiful. I love the song. Don't really, like I said, I want to focus on the music, but I can't help but mention the video on this is just stunning, and it's worth looking up. but then you also have Rain, and Rain to me is like artistic pop perfection. It's just such a great song, and it's a shame it only made top 20. To me, it should have been higher, but likely it was because of the backlash at that time it didn't go higher, because damn it, that song's good. That's just such a that's top tier Madonna song for me. Definitely very, very much a you know, great song. But like I said, this album, well regarded. You know, it's listed in multiple publications as one of the top albums of the 90s. Definitely has been seen as very influenced on later artists like, you know, Janet Jackson, Beyonce, Britney, Christina, you know, Lady Gaga, all of them. There's aspects of this that were kind of picked up by them on later albums, you know? So yeah, it definitely had a huge place in the pop pantheon, and it definitely is a top tier Madonna album. So essential songs of this album: Deeper and Deeper, Rain, Erotica, and Bad Girl. Personal favorites are Bye Bye Baby and In This Life. Now, I do want to kind of talk about In This Life a little bit, because that one was written about two of her friends that died of AIDS, and it definitely is very personal, and definitely really, really love that song. So here we are at the end of Erotica, and as I've been recording, I realized that this has taken a long time, and I know that this is a probably a lot more in depth than I did for Dolly. But like I said, Dahlia could split into eras a little bit better. Madonna, you know, each album is an era. I mean, here we are 10 years into her career, and I'm already an hour and a half into an episode. But in that 10 years, you had her debut album, Madonna. You had Like a Virgin. You had True Blue. You had, you know, Who's That Girl? You had You Can Dance. You had Like a Prayer. You had the Immaculate Collection. And you had Erotica. And that's not including a couple other soundtrack singles that she had in between there. That's a great run of music. Just absolutely stellar. I mean, I would put any of these albums on and listen to them front to back. If I had to pick one, though, it would be Like a Prayer all day. And if I had to rank this particular era, I would say my top three would be Like a Prayer, Erotica, and her first album has her albums I would listen to. And of course, I would listen to Immaculate Collection just front to back. I mean, it's a good sampling of all the hits. Like I said, it's not all of them though. So I'm gonna end it right here at part one, and I'll come back and I'll talk about. I have 30 more years to cover. But you know, it gets a little bit easier to cover. You know, she kind of slowed down a little bit on her releases and spreads them out a little bit more. And some of them, you know, are not as not going to be as deep to talk about. I am going to wait to put my playlist together for this because I'm going to include all of the essential songs and then my personal favorites. So just be on the lookout for that playlist in the show notes. But like I said, I'm already an hour and a half in. I'm only 10 years in. So I have like 10 pages of notes for her career sitting in front of me. So kind of should have figured I couldn't do this all in one sitting. But, you know, it's worth a try to see what we could do. But so here's the Diva Directory on Madonna Part 1, the first 10 years of her career. And so let me know what you think. You know, like I said, leave a review on iTunes, share the episode around, and that'll be it for tonight. And I will come back with some more episodes. I'm probably going to finish this off a little bit sooner than the 2 weeks and probably give this to you in chunks over the holiday in the States. We're about to hit Thanksgiving. So we will take it from here. So that's it for this, and I look forward to talking to you next time, and much love.